Now it's official. So last week we started the beginning of Parak Hey, but today we're really going to go through it. Parak Hey is a great parak, very, very uplifting one. So it's nice to change of pace with so much of complexity in Sefer Shmuel and challenging moments. This one's going to be a real just uplifting one. And I'm going to try to do something a little bit new from the previous year we had, because I'm going to try to mix in little a YouTube video. So we'll see if I can do that on screen share. By now, I should be able to really have a handle on Zoom. On the other hand, right now, we should really have a handle on COVID. So if we don't have a handle on COVID, it's okay. I don't have a handle on Zoom. So here's what it is. All right, let's start. So we began Parak Hey last week, and we saw David becoming king. We saw the people coming to David. There's a Canaan coming to David. Maybe there's Sanhedrin getting involved. And where we're going to pick up is Pasuk Vav. And the Navi tells us that David and his men go straight to Yerushalayim, and the Yavusi are still in Yerushalayim. There's a very cryptic Pasuk where they're told, where David is told by the people from Yavus, which is one of the seven nations of Canaan, that you're not going to come here unless you get rid of the Ivrim and the Pischim, the blind and the lame. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And we just have like four psukim. It's really amazing. You know, this is the conquest of Yerushalayim. This is the obviously most important, holiest city, the capital city, the most important conquest of David's whole reign. And the Navi really does not spend very much time at all describing what happens. We're literally told David conquers it. Yilko David es metzudas tzion ki ir David. We're just told that he conquers it. The Navi like has absolutely no interest in the details. We're given a little bit of a hint, which we'll have to tease out. David says, Kol makevu si v'yigabe tzinor. Anybody who touches the tzinor, whatever exactly that is. And then we're not told what's going to happen with him. Then we're told more about these pischim and these ivrim, that they were despised by David. So a lot of very, very cryptic, very, very gnomic references in these couple of psukim. We don't know what these blind and lame are. We don't know why David hates them. We don't know what this tzinor is and how David is conquering the city. What's very, very clear is that David succeeds. David takes it over. The city is called Ir David. David builds out from the Milo, which I think is like the neighborhood for the high officials. And Vayelach David halach v'gadol v'ashon lokeitz v'akosimo. Right? The piece ends with David growing greater and greater. Hashem is with him. And it's not only Hashem, but it's Hashem lokeitz v'akos. We know that that's a loaded line in Sefer Shmuel. That was the name originally invoked. Right, the Gemara and Brachos pointed out that Chana was the one, the first person to ever call Hashem, Hashem Tzvakos, the master of hosts, right, the name which most emphasizes Hashem's power and influence here on earth. So that is the name of Hashem, which is invoked to emphasize that David is now in Yerushalayim and he's taken over. So let's take a step back. We're going to talk about why the Navi presents things this way, what this is doing here. What is going on with these Ivrim and these Pischim? What is going on with the Tzinor? And why the importance of Yerushalayim? And like historically, what's been going on with Yerushalayim until this point? So the first thing to note is that just, right, literally, the Navi makes it sound as if it was the second after David became king that he's going to Yerushalayim. We have those earlier psukim, David becomes king, everyone comes to him. And then right afterwards, pronto squat, Vayelech HaMelech v'Anashav Yerushalayim. It's like the first thing he's doing. Now, it's actually not so clear if chronologically that is correct. It's going to depend on a few things. We'll get to Perek Chaf Aleph, and we'll see the Navi at the end of Sefer Shmuel talks about all these different battles and adventures that David and some of his men have. And it's very possible, especially battles against the Plishtim. David has many, many battles against the Plishtim, even when he's king. And it's very possible that some of these had already happened before David has the chance to go to Yerushalayim. So whether or not this actually happened the split second after David became king, the Navi definitely wants to give us that impression, right? It's clear that David wanted to go straight to Yerushalayim the second he became king. And it's very possible that that actually was the first thing on his to-do list. Right? But that's just the first thing we need to appreciate. Now, why would David want to run straight to Yerushalayim? Why would that be on the first thing? Again, either the first thing practically, chronologically, right? The first thing he actually did as king, or whether it was just his number one priority, and as soon as he had the chance, it was the first thing he ran to do, why would that be so high on his priority list? So the Malbim talks about this. And the Malbim says, right, we have to go back. We have to understand the role of Yerushalayim geographically. We have to understand the role of Yerushalayim politically. And we have to understand everything that David has been trying to do until now. David has been laser focused on trying to bring Shevet Binyamin, the rest of Bnei Yisrael, and Shevet Binyamin, the house of Shaul, into the fold. And in the early Prakim of Shmuel Beis, he was getting, he was suffering losses. First, he suffered a major loss when Avner and Ish-bosheth set up the rival kingdom. And then he suffered the setback when Avner was about to deliver them into his hand, and then Yoav assassinated Ish-bosheth. Right now, it seems like he's finally succeeded because the other Shvatim came to David at the end of Parak, the beginning of Parak. Hey, but the Malbim explains that David knows exactly what he's doing because he goes straight to Yerushalayim to nail down the unity of Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. The very first piece, I'm just reading the beginning of it inside. He's going to pick up on a few different themes that Yerushalayim has. He says, "Acher." Now that the two kingdoms have been united, until now, there were two separate kingdoms with two separate leaders. Now it's one united kingdom under David. He says, this was politically advisable. V'chein hofia ritzon Hashem. This is also clearly what Hashem wanted. She'ir hamalucha tia bigvul hashayach l'shnei hashvatim shayu shivtei malchus. That the capital city should be on the border of both shvatim, which are both royal shvatim. V'zeh haya b'Yerushalayim. This is Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim sits squarely on the borders of both Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. Now, the Gemara also says that Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. Yerushalayim is the original Washington, D.C., you know, lahavdil. But Yerushalayim is a city which is not given to any Shevet in particular, belongs to all of Klal Yisrael. Tehillim calls Yerushalayim the Ir Shechubra LaYachdav. It's the uniting and united city. At the same time, it lies smack between the land of Yehuda and the land of David. Right, and that's clear from the couple of Pesukim Sefer Shoftim quotes, and we're going to have to revisit this in a second, but one Pesukim Sefer Shoftim, Parag Aleph, talks about Bnei Yehuda fighting against Yerushalayim, and we have another Pesukim a few Pesukim later in the first Parag of Sefer Shoftim, which says that the sons of Binyamin failed to drive the Yebusi out of Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim is on the border between Binyamin and Yehuda, and David realizes politically that the best way to advance and really cement the unity of the kingdom is to move the capital to a city which is between Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, this is much to the chagrin of Shevet Yehuda, and David will pay a price for this later on in the Sefer, because the capital city of Shevet Yehuda is Hebron. So he's moving from his power base to a city which is much, which is more cosmopolitan, a little bit more of a difficult lift. But says the Malbim, that's the immediate goal. David has unity on his mind, and he's not just going to rest with the fact that because they have no choice, the other Shvatim are coming to him. He is going to take proactive action to take a clear step demonstrating that he is seriously invested in this process of uniting all of Klal Yisrael together, right? That's besides, obviously, the Kedusha element which Yerushalayim has, which the Malbim, with which the Ramban and Torah points out, goes all the way back. It was very, very old, the awareness that there was something special about Yerushalayim. The old kings of Yerushalayim had the name Tzedek in their name, Malki Tzedek in the time of Avram, Adonit Tzedek in the time of the Shoftim. So Ramban points out that Yerushalayim always had been known as a special city, as a city of justice. That's why the Haftorah we have for Shabbos Chazon, when Yeshaya decries all the corruption in Yerushalayim, so he talks about the city of justice, how it's just become totally corrupted. It was a city of justice even before the time of David HaMelech. Achalachas kama v'kama now. Right. So we have the Malbim, and we appreciate why this is so high up on David's list. Yeah. But you know, we also need to ask, what exactly has been going on in Yerushalayim until now? Because as we look at these couple of psukim, like, wait a second, right? The beginning of Shoftim did tell us, it sounds like the people of Yehuda already conquered Yerushalayim. They put it to the sword, and they put the city on fire. And yet a few psukim later in Shoftim, we were told that the Avusi were in Yerushalayim and Shevet Binyamin did not get them out, and that they're still there. So how can that be? Literally, it's not like two places in different spots in time. This is one parak in Sefer Shoftim. We're told in Pasuk Ches that the Bnei Yehuda conquered Yerushalayim. Then we're told in Pasuk Chaf Aleph that the Bnei Binyamin did not conquer Yerushalayim. In the story of Pilegesh Begiva, when the man and his Pilegesh are traveling, so they do not go to Yerushalayim because it is a Yevusi city. They say, Chas v'Shalom, we're not going to go to a city of Goyim, we should go to a city of Jews, which is super ironic because the city of Jews they go to, which is Giva, turns out it's a city where it's just like Sodom. So that's part of the perversity of the story, right? Yerushalayim should be Jewish, but it's Kanani, and the Jews who should be behaving like Jews are behaving like people from Sodom, which are Kananim. So everything is backwards in the story of Pilegesh v'Giva, but what happened to Yerushalayim? And obviously the Yevusim are there because that's why David HaMelech has to conquer it now. So what's going on? So there are a couple of answers, but the most basic one is given by the Abarbanel, which really makes a lot of sense. And the Abarbanel doesn't make this point, but there's an echo of this with Yerushalayim later on in Jewish history, going back to the Hanukkah story. Abarbanel explains that when we talk about Yerushalayim, we can talk about the city of Yerushalayim, and we can talk about the district of Yerushalayim. And he says there was a shem machoz. No, there's New York City and there's New York State. So Yerushalayim was the city that was at the heart of the district of Yerushalayim, which had a number of towns and villages in it. In fact, if we read the pasuk carefully earlier in Sefer Shoftim, scroll up for a second, we'll see that this is implicit in the pasuk itself, because the Navi says, so they conquered Yerushalayim, and then it talks about and the city went on fire. So it's clear that there is a Yerushalayim, and there's a city, there's an ear, and there's something more than that. So the Abarbanel explains what's happening in this pasuk is the people of Yehuda are conquering the district of Yerushalayim, and then the city they're lighting on fire. Now, okay, well, it sounds like they conquered the city too. So what happened with the city? So some of this he says, right, and this actually really works. So he says, Chelek Binyamin lo nilka, right? So okay, so Yehuda conquered their portion, Binyamin did not conquer their portion. Then Abarbanel says he thinks that actually they did not conquer the city. Hanira shalo lakdu esa'ir b'nisharu ba hayavusi. The Kolshkin Hamivtsar, Shiha Mitsuda, and for sure the fortress, which is going to become prominent later on, right? Mitsuda Tzion, the fortress, the fortified part of Yerushalayim. So Barbanel thinks that's what was never conquered. Now, go back to the Psukim and Shoftim one more time. We'll see exactly how I think is the easiest way to reconcile the Psukim over here. So the Navi tells us that Rabbi Yamin never conquered Yerushalayim, and the Yavusi still dwells there. What about the fact that Bnei Yehuda conquered the city? Well, what's a little bit interesting is that the Navi tells us that they put it to sword and Vesa'ir Shalchu Ba'ish. They lit the city on fire. If you look at in Sefer Shoftim, which is describing the rest of the conquests of Shevet Yehuda, that's where the stories of Kalev and Anasniel and Chevron, it is only Yerushalayim which they talk about lighting the city on fire. Probably the easiest way to understand what happened was Yerushalayim has a fortress. It has a Metsuda. And even when Bnei Yehuda broke into the city, they never conquered the fortress. This is exactly actually what happens to the Chashmonaim in the time of the Hanukkah story. They conquer Yerushalayim from the Greeks, but there is the Akra, there is the massive fortress, which is garrisoned by the Greeks, and it takes them 20 years to conquer the fortress. They hold on to the rest of the city, but the fortress takes them 20 years to conquer. And it's a disaster. It's brutal, right? It's very, very difficult to live in the city when the most fortified part is still controlled by the enemy. So it sounds like what probably happened in the time of Shoftim was the Bnei Yehuda conquered the district of Yerushalayim. They were able to penetrate the city of Yerushalayim, but they were not able to occupy it because they did not succeed in conquering the fortress, the Metzuda. So what did they do? They burned, they light the city on fire, they torch the city, and then they leave. They're not able to hold the city. And that's why it is specifically Yerushalayim about which we're told, you know, they killed anybody they found, and then Vesa'ir Shilchu Ba'ish, they burned the city down, and then they left. The Yavusi, the surviving Yavusi, are still in the fortified Metzuda, and then what happens? The Bnei Binyamin can't drive them out. It's actually their job. It's actually their territory. And then the Yavusi rebuild the city, refortify the city, and then they're back in Yerushalayim until the time of David HaMelech. So the surrounding district is conquered by Bnei Yisrael, but the city, they penetrate, but they never occupy the city, and then the control of the Yavusi is restored. That's basically, I think, how to reconstruct what the Abarbanel explains has been happening. So it means that Yerushalayim has been a Yavusi city for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now, what actually happened? So what's interesting also is that the conquest of Yerushalayim is also described in Divrei Hayamim Parak Yud Aleph. And there are a couple of pieces which are missing from the Divrei Hayamim piece and are in the Sefer Shmuel piece, and vice versa. To some degree, it's clear why. To some degree, it's not. The strange psukim about the blind and the lame, the pischim and the ivrim, do not appear in Divrei Hayamim. Also, the line about the tzinor does not appear in Divrei Hayamim. So, but what Divrei Hayamim does have, the black parts here, are basically in Sefer Shmuel. Red parts is that David says, whoever can break into the Yavusi first, he'll be the Rosh and the Sar, and Yoav ben Tsruya is the one who breaks in first. So that piece is taken as not there in Sefer Shmuel. And then the other piece that's not in Sefer Shmuel is that, sure enough, it's clear that Yoav is really taking over, because as they build and repair the city, Yoav is in charge of that. So it sounds like until now, Yoav has been the head of David's army. He's been the head commander. And now Yoav is really being promoted to defense minister, right? There's now a political element to his position, because he's not just leading the troops, but he's in charge of building up and the defenses of the city. He's now officially the Sar Tzava of David. Now, we can understand why Sefer Shmuel would not want to put this here. First of all, Sefer Shmuel, this is going to come again and again, but Sefer Shmuel has an agenda, right? We're not interested in history. There are messages that we're interested in driving home. And right now, in this parak, we're not talking about the godless of Yoav. For the most part, in Sefer Shmuel, there's a pattern. When David is up, Yoav is down, and when Yoav is up, and vice versa. Well, this parak is going to be one of the quintessential parakim where David is on fire. David is just crushing it from beginning to end of the parak. Not the time to focus on Yoav doing something impressive. But furthermore, and especially if we went out of our way to shorten the chronology, especially if there were some things that happened after David became king, but the Navi specifically wants to put the conquest of Yerushalayim next to David becoming king, because we want to emphasize that the second that David becomes king, he wants to be in Yerushalayim, even if it took a little while to get there. Well, we then have something a little bit awkward, which is, it was only 5 minutes ago in Sefer Shmuel that Yoav was assassinating Avner, and David was cursing Yoav and was cursing Avishai. He was saying, I have these Bnei Tsruya, they're more, they're kashim mimeni, they're so tough, I can't deal with them. And then you blink and all of a sudden he's being promoted and he's the defense minister and he's the head of the army and he's the conqueror of Yerushalayim. Like, and it's amazing. That's a major, you know, zigzag to have. So we can understand why that would not be something that the Navi would want to focus on in Sefer Shmuel. It's something that's left for us to learn in Sefer Divrei Hayam. Okay, now what exactly does David do? What does David do? So we're given, and it's amazing, this is the conquest of Yerushalayim, Shalom HaKodesh, and we're given almost nothing. We're told he conquers the Mitzuda. And then we're given this one passage where David just says, Kol Na'keyev Usiv Yigabit Zinor. And then there's a blank. What's the blank? Anyone who strikes the Yavusi and gets to the Tzinor will what? Yeah, you have to go then to the Divrei Hayamim to see, oh, right, he will become the Sar, he will become the Rosh. So it's like the whole Pasuk is truncated. We're shrinking this as much as we can. Why? So the answer to why is very clear, because this parak is not, and is going to be a pattern. We are not interested in the military strategy, the details of the tactics of David's victories. Now, we're going to try to reconstruct a little bit because it's really interesting. But right, we should appreciate that the Navi does not want us focusing on the military element, right? We want to be focused on the fact that David has priority straight. We're focused on uniting the kingdom. And we're going to talk about the battle a little bit later in Parak Hey. We're going to focus on David's Bitachon. But what is this? Yigabit Zinor. So the good old, right? We could think of a Zinor as a pipe. And the 1917 JPS says it's a gutter. Let's see. And this is going to be, this is a great actually case, because as we'll see, we have Mefarshim going in directions. And then we have classic scholarship, which took one direction. We'll see why it's risky to put so much faith in classic scholarship. You know, we don't put faith in princes. We don't put faith in politicians. Don't put too much faith in scholarship, as we'll see in just a minute. So what is the Tzinor? So Rashi suggests that the Tzinor was a Migdal. Right, Rashi thinks that it was a tower. It's a fortress. He says the Rashi. It's linked to Rashi's understanding of the Ivrim and the Pischim, which Rashi thinks were idols. Which Rashi thinks that they had idols that they placed on top of the tower. So that's going on. David says anybody who can get to the top of the tower and can destroy those idols, and could also suggest, you know, it's probably the fortified center of the city. Get on top of the Migdal, take that over. That's going to be the goal. That's Rashi. He thinks the Tzinor is a Migdal. Rabbeinu Yeshaya has a different suggestion. He thinks that the Tzinor is the bolt which is locking the gate. In which case, what David is saying is anybody who can get on the other side of the wall and touch the bolt, right? Get rid of the bolt and open the gate so that our soldiers can get through the other side. That is the Tzinor, right? So according to Rashi, we're trying to conquer a tower. According to Rabbeinu Yeshaya, we're trying to open the gate. We're trying to open the gate. The Ralbag, and then for a while, all the scholars and modern people, the Dat Mikra actually also is very enthusiastic about this. So the Ralbag understands that no, a Tzinor is a Marzev, right? This is really, it's a gutter, right? It's a fountain. There's something where water is being poured out of. Now, the Ralbag has a whole long discussion of what exactly he thinks is happening and how he thinks this is connected to these idols, which he thinks the Ivrim and the Pischim are. But if you open up the Dat Mikra, which I think was published in 1981, so you'll see that he goes all in on this pshat. For a while, this was something which was very enthusiastically received, and everyone rejected Rabbeinu Yeshaya and for sure rejected Rashi because of archaeology, right? What did they discover? So they thought they discovered Warren's Shaft. Back in 1867, there was a British army officer named Charles Warren, one of the early archaeologists hanging out in Israel at the time. He ends up becoming the police chief of London during the time of the Jack the Ripper serial killings. So that's a historical fact, okay? So that was his later career. But he pokes around as an archaeologist in Yerushalayim in the 1860s, and he discovers what's known as Warren's Shaft, which is this basically You know, there was an old channel, and then he went into Chezkiah's tunnel, which we'll talk about in a second, and he saw that there was a 13-meter high, very narrow winding shaft, which then led to a tunnel, which went into the old city of Yer David. So what is very exciting, because what had they discovered? They had discovered how the Yevusim got water into the city of Yerushalayim. Anyone who's been, I'm sure, probably all been to the Chizkiyos tunnel, right? And it's absolutely amazing. Normally, the way we think of it is we think that there used to be, here's Yer David, right? It's on the mountain. And then you have the Nachal Kidron, you have the Kidron Valley, and there's the Gihon Spring, which is down here. And the problem you have for anybody who wants to protect Yerushalayim is the walls need to be up on the mountain so that you're actually protected from enemies. But then you also need to be able to have water. So the way usually we're taught is, so what do they do? So Chizkiyahu made a huge tunnel so that they could have water inside the city and it would be protected from the Assyrians who were coming, right? And the truth is, it's much more complicated than that. And what Chizkiyahu did was much more advanced, because Yerushalayim is a much, much, much older city, obviously, than Chizkiyahu. And the Canaan who had lived there for hundreds of years before David HaMelech came in also understood that you needed to have water, access in the city. So how did they get that? They used to have this tunnel. The Gihon Spring is over here. The Gihon Spring used to run out on the outside of the city. It would water all these farms over here. And then they had a tunnel with a shaft, so they can go here, lower their buckets, and get water over here. So they'll have water inside the city, and everything's going to be good. Chizkiyahu comes along, and Chizkiyahu says, the Pasuk says, say for Malachim, is, yeah, it's very nice, we have access to water in the city, but what's going to happen if Sanchirov shows up? He'll be able to drink all the water too, because the water, after we collect some of it here, the water keeps on flowing outside the city. So instead, and besides for that, Yerushalayim has grown and grown. It's very nice you have access to water over here, but the city has grown bigger and bigger farther to the south. How are these guys going to get water? So Chizkiyahu makes a new tunnel. And what's amazing is that we know that they built it from both sides, right? But I think we have no idea, Adayom Azeh, how it was like in curves following where there was softer rock. And yet somehow they were still able to figure out where to meet. No one knows how on earth they're able to do this. But what this did was it meant that the entire Gihon Spring is inside the walls of the city. And if you're, the Assyrians out over here, you're going to get nothing. Okay. So the assumption was, this was the Tzinor, right? We understand what the Mefarshim didn't understand. And this is kind of what the Ralbag was saying. So we'll be enthusiastic about the Ralbag. What did Yoav do? Right? As this old sign says, Yoav enters over here, he goes up the Tzinor, he sneaks into the water channel, gets into the city, no one sees him, he runs around to the gate, opens up the gate, David and his men break through, and that's what happened. That's the Tzinor, it's exactly Warren's shaft. Right? Now, the problem with this is, and I'll take a second to get this video out here, is that as they did further exploration, turns out it wasn't true. Hold on a second, let me see, Is this video being shared now? All right, so 1 second. I'm just going to stop, and then let's do this one time. Try this. Okay. Okay, 5 minutes to see this, because what happened was basically in 1995, it's a new professor, Ronnie Reich, who did some explorations, and this is really interesting. Very interesting. Let's see.
Today, right now,
this is the wrong one. Oh, darn, it's the wrong video. Oh, 1 sec. Here
We can't hear him.
You can't hear him?
I can't.
Can't hear? Hear the volume?
I can't hear either.
How about now? Better?
No, it's garbled. It's garbled.
That's so weird. Okay, so we'll bag that. It was worth a try. That's so strange. Anyway, so what they discovered was, and you have this from stop share. Share again. And go back to our source sheet. Basically, they discovered that there were massive, massive fortifications over here. That it turned out that they never used Warren's shaft at all. In fact, it had never been excavated. The whole original scholarly assumption for over 100 years, from like 1867 to 1995, what the archaeologists were sure they understood, was totally wrong. This Warren shaft was just a natural fissure in the earth, and it had never been used by the Yavusi. The Yavusi had a regular tunnel, which then went over here, and they just got water from the spring, and that was protected by massive, massive walls and towers. So there was no way that Yoav was sneaking in a tunnel, then going up a shaft and then coming around and no one seeing him and him opening the door, right? There were massive fortifications over here. So that's not what Yoav was doing. What that could mean then is, the Navi could mean that it's talking about the water system and Yoav was able to conquer it. It also can mean that we should go back to Rashi's original understanding. And what was the Tzinor? The Tzinor was the tower that was protecting the water system, right? Maybe it was actually the Migdal. So it's a great case study because you never want to be too all in. Archaeologists have proved something, and we should with all due respect to Rashi, put him on the side. In this case, they lasted 130 something years. And you look in 1981, the Dot Mikra, that's what they say. Well, along comes a new archaeologist in 1995, and that stuff changes. So, bottom line is that Yoav, they break in, right? They conquer the city, but the Navi just is not particularly interested in analyzing the details of it, right? We can maybe reconstruct a little bit of what happened, but this is where they'd want to focus their efforts. How exactly it happened, we still don't totally. Okay, so then the Navi continues, right? After the conquest of Yerushalayim, and this is a big deal, now things get better and better. First we have Hiram Melech Tzor. Right, so this is Tyre up in Lebanon. For now, they're good guys. They're going to be bad guys later on in Bias Rishon. But this is one of the families of the Canaanim. These are Canaanim, but they're not from the seven nations of Canaan. So it's totally permissible to have an alliance with these people because they're not from the seven nations that live in Eretz Canaan. They live farther to the north. So as soon as David becomes king and takes over Yerushalayim, so we see Hiram responds to this appropriately. He sends David cedar wood. He realizes he has a business opportunity, and he makes David a palace. In a couple of prakim, David is going to want to make the base of Mikdash. And so everything is great, right? David's getting international recognition. He's forging alliances. David realizes that Hashem is on his side. David takes more wives and Pilag Shem. He has more children. Everything is working out great. Radakta is a diak. He says the exact number of wives allowed to him by the halacha. Everything's great. Now, the Navi contrasts Hiram, the king of Tzor, who the minute he hears about David and Yerushalayim, recognizes the kingdom and makes an alliance with the Plishtim to the south. When the Plishtim here, and did the Navi use the Lashon of Yishma? Did it do that? No, didn't go that far. Okay, so Plishtim hear about this, and immediately, as soon as the Plishtim hear that David is the king over all of Israel, so they try to kill him, right? They all unite, and they go up against David. Once again, the Plishtim invade. The Malbim suggests that until now, the Plishtim maybe had banked on previous good relations that David had with the Plishtim, and they thought he would be on their side. Maybe they were happy to see a civil war between Ishbosheth and David, but now it turns out that the monarchy is uniting, and David is not friendly to the Plishtim, so the Plishtim are going to try to wipe him out. And what do the Plishtim do? They do the same thing they did again and again and again in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Remember, the Plishtim are down by the coast. The land of Yehuda is up in the mountains. And so again and again, you find a valley and you try to march through it. This time, the Plishtim go through Emek Rephaim. Right? So we know where Emek Rephaim is. We know exactly how they're marching through to Yerushalayim. And then Rabbi tells us about two different battles that David fights. And both of those battles, we're told very, very little about how David wins, but we're told some other very, very important things. First of all, the second that they approach, what does David do? Yishal David b'ashem limor ha'ayla al plishtim ha'tadim b'yadi. So right away, of course, David asks your metumim, should I attack? And David gets two different responses. The first battle, Hashem tells David, ale, go attack them. David attacks. David has a fantastic victory. And then the victory is so phenomenal. And the Plishtim run away in such a panic that they even leave behind their idols. By Azusha Mesat Bayan. By Saint David Ben Ashav. We'll come back to that in a second. Right. So the first battle, Hashem tells David, go out of the fortress and attack them. They do, and it's phenomenally successful. Okay, here we have the good old dot maker map. So we get to see what they're doing. Right, here's Emek Rephaim over here. Emek Ha'alah, this is where David fought against Goliath, right? That's where they broke through this way. So you see different directions they're taking coming up against Yerushalayim, and they're retreating one way, they're retreating the next way. We'll see their retreat again in a second. But first battle, everything's great. Second battle, so it happens again. They're back in Emek Rephaim. The Plishtim don't learn. David once again asks, what should we do? But this time he gets the opposite response from Hashem. Yomer, lo salad, do not go up to them. Instead, and these psukim are hard to understand what exactly is happening, but the basic idea is that David has to go around them, lie in ambush, and then wait until the moment where he hears what seems to be the top of the trees rustling. And then he is going to attack. So David has to hold and hold and hold and wait until he hears the sound, and then ki az yatzah Hashem lefanacha lakos machane plishtim. So David has two battles, and he's given two opposite commandments. The first time he's told attack, and he has bitachon that Hashem has his back, and he attacks. The second time he's given the more difficult challenge, which is to wait, and he's able to wait and able to keep his men in check, and that also works fantastic. Okay, now we need to appreciate, though, probably the last major point we'll have for today to close out the parak, is that besides just David, you know, listening to the Urim Vetumim, regardless of what he's told, when he's told Ale or he's told Lo Sala, the Navi seems to view both of these battles that David is fighting against the Plishtim as Tikunim for earlier battles that Bnei Yisrael fought against the Plishtim in Shmuel Aleph. In the first battle, we are told that David wins such a fantastic victory, and the Plishtim run away so quickly that they leave behind their idols. But the Navi has a bit of a strange word. We're told, "Vayisa'im David anashah." Literally, they carried them away. Well, we would wonder, what are they going to do with idols? Why are they carrying away idols? They should destroy the idols. Well, what are they doing carrying them? Sure enough, we go to Divrei Hayamim, and we're told, "Vayazu shamas Eloheim v'yomer David." They burned the idols. So Rashi quotes the Targum right here, which says exactly that. The David and Vayisa'im really means to burn. And I think one of the Mefarshim, I forgot which off the top of my head, quotes a couple other places in Tanakh where that can be the, where Vayisa'im can mean a burning. But still, you wonder why the Navi would use a word which sounds like transportation. Abarbanel resolves it. But he doesn't explain it. Abarbanel says, no problem. First, they carried away the idols, right? Says, they brought them to Yerushalayim, lecharpam ul gadfam. They brought the idols to Yerushalayim to disgrace them. Let's put on a show. You know, look how well the gods of the Plishtim protected them. And then after they had this public display humiliating the captured idols of the Plishtim, then they burned them. Now that's how the Abarbanel explains. So that would really explain why the Navi would use a word which can mean burning, but primarily means to carry away, because first David and his men carried them away, and then they burned them. If that's the case,
I think the Navi is pretty clearly doing what David HaMelech had in mind, was this is a tikkun for the first major battle that Bnei Yisrael fought against the Plishtim. What happened in the first battle Bnei Yisrael fought against the Plishtim? Well, that was the battle where, remember, Bnei Yisrael did not have faith in Hashem, they had faith in a box. The Aron came, and Bnei Yisrael were sure that we're saved because we have the box. And the Plishtim conquered the Aron, right? The Plishtim won the battle, obviously. They took the Aron back, and they placed the Aron in front of their temple. Now, it didn't go well for the Plishtim after that, but it seems like David is having, right, a parallel tikkun over there. The Plishtim captured the Aron, they brought it back to their capital city. We are going to capture their gods, we're going to bring their gods back to our capital city, except in the case of the Plishtim, well, the Aron kind of destroyed the Plishtim after that, and they brought the Aron back. David HaMelech, we're going to bring the idols, we're going to disgrace the idols, then we're going to burn them. And next Perek is going to be the Perek where David attempts to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. So the Aron piece is being recalled in Perek Hey of Sefer Shmuel Beis, right? Leading up to what's going to happen in the next Perek. So that's the first battle. A tikkun for that first titanic loss that Bnei Yisrael had against the Plishtim. What about the second battle? The battle where David is told to wait, where David is told to hold on. You have to hold tight. And the Malbim has a very interesting discussion about this battle, where he points out that David, Hashem was really giving David, was strengthening him in terms of how to be a king, right? He's telling him, you know, being a king means you need to rely on Hashkacha. It's not going to be a world of open miracles. It's going to be a world where you have to rely on divine providence. So the Malbim says, first of all, this was the correct military strategy. You attack them the first time. This time you're going to set a surprise ambush because that's not what they're going to be expecting. And he explains that Hashem said, wait until the trees rustle, because at that point you'll also attack. They'll hear the trees. They're think to be surrounded on both sides. It's going to maximize the panic you're going to impose. But obviously for any of this to work, David has to wait while the Plishtim get closer and closer and closer and closer, and hoping that there's going to be some sudden wind and some sudden noise that's going to actually make the trees rustle. So militarily, it's a fantastic strategy. It's also a strategy which necessitates reliance on bitachon and patience and control over all his men. David's men are sitting in the ambush. They think they have the Plishtim lined up. They don't see us. Any minute, some Plishti scout could come across the ambush and blow our cover. So why don't we attack now? Why don't we attack now? You can imagine David's men are coming to him every second saying, we have them, we have them, we have them. And David has to keep them under control. He has to keep himself under control. And he has to say, wait until I get the sign. Well, when did this happen? Again, says the Malbim, this is clearly a tikkun for the first battle that Shaul fought against the Plishtim. When Shmuel told Shaul that you need to wait 7 days until I come. And Shaul waits and waits and waits, and his army gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and the men begin to panic, and finally Shaul breaks. Shaul cracks, and Shaul just brings the carbon. And the second he brings the carbon, Shmuel shows up. And then in the continuation of the battle, Shaul does not ask the Urim Thummim. He brings the Kohen, and then he turns the Kohen away. Well, here, David is showing all the bitachon and all the leadership that Shaul lacked. And Shmuel asked a lot of Shaul, and Shaul was 95% of the way there. He waited until the seventh day, but it was that last 5% that makes all the difference. And that is what David has over here. This time, he waits and waits and waits, and he waits, right? He listens. The first thing he does, he goes straight to the Urim V'Tumim, right? While Shaul put the Urim V'Tumim away. He waits and waits and waits, while Shaul was not able to hold out. And then, what completes it, what completes the tikkun, is that when Shaul fought the battle against the Plishtim, where was it? So they chased them towards Ayalon, and then the battle petered out. And Shaul tried to get the people to go farther. They said, we're not going to do it. Shaul asked Urim V'Tumim, and he no longer got an answer. So it was a tactical victory, but strategically accomplished much, much, much less than they could have. Well, David, and it was perfect, really, because Shaul, you know, he's basically good, but not totally good. So he's given a victory, which is a good victory, but not a smashing victory. Well, David is the other way around.
David, who holds on the whole way through and keeps on going back to the Urim Thummim, and he listens to the answer, whether the answer is easy to follow, whether the answer is difficult to follow, whether his men are going to go along with it enthusiastically, or whether it's going to be very difficult to get his men involved. David sticks to it both times. And we're told, you see where Ayalon is, right? So Shaul, he fought his battle in the exact same neighborhood. David's battle was like, Shaul's battle was right over here. And the Plishtim, you know, ran away and the battle petered out like over here. Well, David chases them. And the Navi says, it's the same road. I think it's like Kvish 443 nowadays in Yerushalayim. But this time, David is able to chase them this way, past Ayalon, all the way to Gezer, we're told, all the way to where the Plishtim were. So this battle is the one which has a real strategic victory. We are never again going to see the Plishtim invade Eretz Yisrael. That was the last time the Plishtim posed a serious threat. David just ended it. Just ended. You know, in a couple of prakim, we'll see David take things to the next level against the Plishtim. But what we've been waiting for, going all the way back to Sefer Shoftim, the ending of the military threat of the Plishtim, David succeeds in doing in this parak. And the Navi doesn't really care very much about the military tactics that are involved. The Navi cares about the religious tactics that are involved. So beginning of the parak and the end of the parak, we have David going straight to Yerushalayim, realizing that's the thing he needs to do. And then we have David standing up against the Plishtim. So things are looking good. Things are looking great. And the next week, David's going to say, okay, so now we're in Yerushalayim. Now our enemies are pushed aside. And it's time to bring the Aron Kodesh back to Yerushalayim. So we'll do that next week and forward. And thanks for hanging in on the technical difficulties. It is what it is.